This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Miravis Neal, the latest game-changing fungicide from Syngenta. Does it seem like a strange twist to you when all of a sudden what we think of as mostly feed are the markets that are starting the week with price gains? Well, you know what? Hey, after the reset button was hit on the corn for feed numbers last week, I guess it makes sense.
Live from Sparkle City, USA, via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we'll talk with Rich Nelson from Allendale. And in the final segment, Kerry Artak from ArtakAdvisors.com.
Artak Attack.
Right after the news, Jack Scoville from the Price Futures Group. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Oh, now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Laurie. I almost forgot to announce you, buddy.
No, it's good. It's all good.
Oh, holy smokes. You know, how you doing, bud? Is everything okay?
Really good. Really
good.
I've been sitting here since we last spoke with our beloved listeners, just clickety-clacking away on this keyboard. I'll be honest, a little stir-crazy at the moment. Just a little bit.
Well, that ought to make for an interesting show.
I'll try to keep quiet as best I can.
When there's a little more crazy in the Davis attic, thank you for the warning. That's all I'm going to say.
Be advised.
Yes. Okay. So, the stuff that we think of as feed, corn, soybean meal, both were higher today.
Okay.
Everything else, and I mean, like, everything else. Was lower. Crude oil, even heating oil.
Yes, thank you.
Hey, ethanol is higher. Ethanol is higher, and of course, equities are higher. It's a Monday,
after all.
So equities are higher. But this feed component, this feed situation that we are dealing with now. After the supply and demand report that we got on Friday, I'm writing a column on it for Farm Journal right now. But the World Ag Outlook Board hit the reset, hit the reset on the feed and residual numbers for corn. And I think it's going to bring some consistency back to the balance sheets going forward. And I'm not exactly sure what that means for the markets, but I think it does mean that the feed and residual numbers are going to do a better job of reflecting reality, which is more and more and more cattle and hogs on feed.
Okay.
So.
You know, if you got to miss a deadline for an article, it might as well be for some solid sound logic like that kind of stuff.
See, that's the last time I tell you anything. Missing deadlines all the way.
I believe in you. I believe in you.
Thank you. Thank you. I will get it done. I will get it done. I promise. Let's get to the news.
Export inspections of wheat in the weekend of January 9 totaled nearly 474,000 metric tons. That was at the high end of trade expectations. Still, most market watchers remain disappointed in the export demand for U.S. wheat. Most also agree Russian wheat prices are setting trends in the global market as that country continues to be the number one supplier of wheat to the world. So far in the 2019-20 marketing year, global wheat prices are inching higher, helping U.S. wheat futures to gain about a dollar from the September low, Chip. March hard red futures were 2 cents lower, 4.92¾. March soft red futures slipped 2¼, 5.62¼. March spring wheat off 3 cents, 5.55¼ today.
Yeah, bottom left, top right on that wheat chart right now from that September first trading day of September low. Really impressive the trends that we're seeing in the winter wheat market.
Corn export inspections of just 460,000 metric tons were at the low end of trade expectations, Chip. But USDA this morning also announced the sale of 137,000 metric tons of optional origin corn for delivery to South Korea in the current marketing year. That announcement confirmed some of the late last week rumors that Asian buyers are becoming more active in booking anticipated feed needs. Technically, March corn futures are 13 cents above Friday's price low, helping to build upside price momentum. March corn futures were 3¾ cents higher, 3.89 and a half. July corn firmed 3¼ to 4.02 and 3/4. December 2020 corn closed at 4.04 and 3/4, up 2 cents on the day, Chip.
Yeah, the optional origin on that South Korean corn purchase, it could be from the PNW, it could be from the Gulf, it could be from Argentina, it could be from Brazil, but they made the purchase. Okay. The reason is that I think they're a little concerned that it would be PNW origin, and they don't want the light test weight, high moisture corn coming out of the Dakotas.
Sure.
And that could be our first sign of a cash market influence from that lower quality corn that is being harvested up there.
Well, export inspections of soybeans in the weekend of January 9 totaled 1.136 million metric tons, just topping trade expectations. As traders await signing of the Phase 1 trade agreement with China, March bean futures entered a fairly wide sideways trading range between 935 and 955. The contract is likely to remain inside of that range until traders get a look at the language of the agreement and gain a better understanding of what it might mean for demand for U.S. beans in the months ahead. Capping upside potential in bean prices right now is a generally non-threatening weather outlook in South America. March bean futures were 3¾ cents lower, 9.42 and a quarter. July beans off 3¼, 9.67 and 1/4. November 2020 beans closed at 9.69 and 3/4, down a nickel today, Chip.
Yeah, this non-threatening weather outlook in South America, I don't know how accurate that is. We'll talk to Rich Nelson about it and see what he's thinking.
Yeah.
But it looks to me like Rio Grande do Sul, Parana, are looking at below normal precipitation over the next couple of weeks, and that doesn't seem all that non-threatening to me. Let's get to the livestock in the next segment right now. Let's bring in Jack Scoville from Price Futures Group. How you doing, Jack?
Doing great. How about yourself?
I'm feeling pretty. Is it just me, or does it feel different when corn is trading higher? I love it when corn's trading higher.
It does feel a little different, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Really, you don't even know. You don't really have a good handle on what's going to happen next. But the fact that corn can trade higher, to me, is it's a great sign. I mean, it's been such a dog for so long.
Yep.
Finally, USDA coming up with some changes on the feed side of the ledger.
Yep.
Really, really helped out that market.
Yeah, I agree. When they added 250, I think they added 250 million bushels to the feed and residual estimate from last month for the 2019-20 marketing year. I think that did kind of change attitudes in there a little bit. Hey, is that all it takes, though, Jack? I mean, what if we can continue to – we're not too far away from encouraging some short covering in this corn market.
Well, that would be great if we could. We are knocking on the gates of 392, which is, the previous high. And I think if we can take that out, then we can do something a lot more exciting. And maybe we're seeing some of the buying going on now related to the charts. But to me, that would be really something to keep an eye on.
Right, right. Real quick, Jack, what's your thoughts on that South American weather? Non-threatening, or are there some reasons to be concerned?
Well, there's always reasons to be concerned. Okay. I think the fact that they're going to be drier than normal is got to be a little bit concerning to the people down there. They've been holding their fire. They really haven't been selling that much, so they're clearly concerned.
Thank you, Jack. That is Jack Scoville, Price Futures Group. Coming up next, Rich Nelson from Allendale.
As we enter the new year, many growers are looking back to 2019 for insights on what they can do differently this season. Today, we have Phil Krieg, Agronomy Services Representative from Syngenta, here to talk about Miravis Neo fungicide for corn. Hey, Phil, thanks for joining us again. We talked last time about the weather and the diseases that growers faced in 2019. In response to last year's challenging conditions, how did Miravis Neo perform? How'd it do?
Despite the difficulties that 2019 threw our way, Miravis Neo consistently provided superior disease control and higher corn yields than untreated and competitive brands. For example, growers that used Miravis Neo saw better protection from the diseases that we experienced last year overall, such as northern corn leaf blight, gray leaf spot, rust, and especially tar spot. Right. That's because Mirvis Neo contains one of the most powerful SDHI molecules available in the marketplace, which is extremely broad spectrum to control most common corn diseases and help boost that plant health. Mirvis Neo treated corn stayed healthier longer, and even from the road, you could see a noticeably greener plant compared to untreated or competitor-treated corn.
Cool.
I saw fields where you could see a clear line distinguishing the corn treated with Mirvis Neo from the untreated corn. These fields also had healthier stalks, and that greatly reduces lodging.
Yeah, no doubt about it. That standability late in the season, the help of the fungicides and Mirvis Neo definitely helps out there. Thank you so much, Phil. We'll be hearing again from Phil tomorrow to talk more about what growers can do to better prepare for the 2020 season. To learn more about Mirvis Neo, contact your local Syngenta sales representative or visit SyngentaUS.com/Mirvis Neo.
No matter what you do, you're always raising the bar, trying to do better than ever. Dalaro fungicide for corn and soybeans can help you get the edge you're looking for. Dalaro has a broader spectrum of disease control and best-in-class dual mode of action residual. Plus, it improves plant health, so your top-performing hybrids and varieties will have the protection they need to help you achieve your personal best yields. Dalaro from Bayer. Keep raising the bar. Always read and follow label instructions.
5 conferences, 1 location, something for your entire team. Get ready. The 2020 Top Producer Summit is set for January 27th through the 30th in Chicago. This year's summit is a combination of the 5 highly regarded top producer conferences, Top Producer Seminar, Executive Women in Agriculture, Tomorrow's Top Producer, Farm Journal Legacy Project, and for the first time, the Farm Journal Hemp Summit. Register today for Top Producer Summit at tpsummit.com.
Sometimes life is wonderful, and sometimes it's not. Cherish the good, but always be prepared for life's challenges. At Private Healthcare, we provide the peace of mind you deserve. With Private Healthcare, you'll get the coverage you want and healthcare you need. If your employer doesn't supply healthcare coverage and you don't qualify for Medicare or Medicaid, you need to give us a call right now. Private Healthcare is private health insurance for ages 65 and under with medical, dental, vision, and even prescription coverage. When life comes at you unexpectedly, you need to be ready, and health insurance is your financial safety net. If you're looking for health coverage at the best price and your annual household income is $35,000 or more, give us a call at 800-626-4910. That's 800-626-4910. 800-626-4910.
I'm Zach Johnson, a row crop farmer in Minnesota.
And I'm Mitchell Hora, a farmer in Iowa.
Agriculture has to feed a growing population, and many people want us to pull that off without messing up the environment. So how do we do that?
We're trying to figure that out on our podcast, Fieldwork. Check us out on the AgriTalk app and learn more at fieldworktalk.org.
Three, two, one. Oh no. Which button am I?
When every second counts, you can't wing it.
Guys, a little help up here?
In a home fire, you may have less than 2 minutes to get out. So make a family home fire escape plan. Then practice home fire drills at least twice a year so everyone knows what to do when they hear. Prepare your family at ready.gov/firedrill. Brought to you by FEMA, the Ag Council, and Make Safe Happen.
New Dalaro fungicide for corn and soybeans can help you achieve personal best yields.
Davis, what is it?
Don't worry about it. It's my Sharona. Hands off my Sharona.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. That's Davis. We're going to be talking with Rich Nelson from Allendale here in just a second. Give us a call. It's 855-4-TALK-AG, 855-482-5524. You can also tweet at us.
with hashtag AgriTalk in the message. That way I'll be sure to see it. Mm-hmm. Before we get to the conversation with Rich, let's go ahead and get that livestock news, Davis.
Sure thing. Well, chip cash cattle trade at the end of last week was relatively light, and traders are concerned. That means market-ready supplies are being held back. Even with cattle numbers tightening up this week, backed-up cattle supplies would swing leverage back to packers for the second half of the month. February cattle futures were 87.5 cents lower at 126.55. April cattle futures fell 42.5 to 127.52.5. March feeders fell a buck 60, 145.85. And on the snout side, front month lean hog futures are trading back near contract lows after recent long liquidation as traders await the anticipated surge of pork demand from China. February hogs were a buck 35 lower at 65.90, and April hogs down 75 cents, 73.37.5 chip.
All right. Very good. Thank you. Yeah, I hope that's not happening in the cattle. Some of the comments that I've gotten from finishers, you know, wondering if they should hold back, if they should wait, if they should, you know, they're already 15. Are they going to be 15.50? Are they going to be, you know, that's the way that you can slide that leverage back over to the Packers. I just soon keep our marketings as current as we possibly can.
Agreed.
Okay. Rich Nelson, the chief strategist at Allendale, is my guest today. Rich, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
I'm doing great. How about you guys there?
We are doing just all right. Just all right.
Okay. I would say fantastic, Rich. Let me just, I'm going to edit that comment. We are fantastic, sir. Thank you for asking.
That's the way to say it, yes.
Yeah, but you know, when I'm busting deadlines, like I'm busting deadlines, I'm going to go with all right.
Well, it's better to be too busy than not busy, I guess.
There you go. There you go. That is 100% true. Rich, let's go back to Friday and the reports that we got. If you were going to say, you know, that one is the number that kind of surprised me the most, where would you go?
So I'm actually going to go to the grain stocks number, the December 1 count of corn left over after one quarter usage December 1. So we know from the production reports that USDA revised both the 2018 crop numbers as well as the 2019 fall harvest, and many people were surprised by the increase in production. So the general message was higher supply than people had been expecting, but the fact is we came out with a smaller amount left over after one quarter usage than people were expecting. So very strong implied feed residual demand.
Yep. So this right here where you went, and we did not get together and plan this ahead of time, but where you went is exactly where I am what I'm working on for the next issue of Farm Journal and my column and trying to figure it all out, because it is a bigger beginning stocks for the 2019-20 marketing year, which means a bigger carryover estimate from the 2018-19 marketing year, which means they had to go all the way back and revise the September 1 grain stocks count at a time, Rich, when everybody thought that they had overestimated the 2018 corn crop, which they had, but that adjustment was only 80 million bushels smaller 2018 crop. So they cut the heck out of the feed and residual use to push that carryover up 107 million bushels. It makes my head hurt, Rich, trying to figure it all out.
That's exactly right, and it's kind of tough watching each leg of this whole story. But you know, for a lot of people listening, we need to keep in mind what USDA did was positive. Get down to the stocks to use numbers, the December report had a 13.7% stocks to use. This January number they gave us, even with a higher production, fell to 13.4. So it was a positive report for us on corn.
Yeah, and total implied use or total disappearance in the first quarter of the 2019-20 marketing year, it was down from the previous year, but it was like 0.4%, something like that. So it was basically steady with the previous year, which I don't think many people were anticipating.
No, and on a smaller crop in general, USDA does have a small increase. It's still a smaller crop than last year. So keeping usage anywhere close to the same, given that fact, is still positive.
Right. Now, speaking of that, You didn't say formula driven, but I'm going to say it because it seems like there are times when you get a smaller crop, you're going to have smaller residual component of the feed and residual category. That seems to me that it's formula driven. Well, here we are all of a sudden, our feed and residual number is reflecting animal numbers and actual feed consumption rather than big crop, big residual, small crop, small residual, because feed and residual for 1819 was 5.432, feed and residual for 1920, 5.525. This makes more sense, doesn't it?
It sure does. And yeah. I'm going to add in one more piece of commentary on that discussion. Oftentimes, these numbers don't match up with number of head being fed. We all understand that. But is this now some first signs that perhaps this is a lower quality crop, which will take more to get the same amount?
Well, Rich, you just got credit for that thought in the column.
throw it in there. Go ahead. It's a great discussion point.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. I think that's an excellent point. Could that be? Now, if that turns out to be the case, does that also impact our corn for ethanol grind in the year ahead, or might it?
I think so, because, you know, we do have numbers for September, October, and November. So we actually have a portion of this whole debate already in hand. Based on my numbers, what I'm plugging in for November ethanol output versus the known corn going into those plants, in our numbers, we have a changing corn for ethanol efficiency, which last year ran just over 2% over last year. Now, the numbers I have, at least for November by itself, just November, 2% under last year. So maybe this is being confirmed by some other factors here.
Okay. So USDA has got corn for ethanol use at 5.375, unchanged from a year ago, but down from 5.605 in the 17-18 marketing year. Where might that number be headed?
That's a great question, because as it stands right now, the past 8 weeks of improving ethanol demand on a year-to-year basis, at least, we've now removed a lot of this earlier shortfall. The question I have is ethanol going to be included as far as a package for a trade deal, like Greg Dowd has mentioned a few times before? If so, what are the amounts? So at a starting point, I'm going to say maybe really conservative, maybe an extra 25 million bushels in that category, but it certainly could be a bit more.
Okay. And the big concern is, even if you do get an increase going forward, get an increase in feed and residual corn use, FSI corn use, which includes that corn going to ethanol production, even if you do see some increases there, the concern has got to be that it's offset by even further cuts to the export number, because they took another 75 million bushels off of that, down to 1.775 billion bushels. But again, you got to go back to the same thing that you just said, and Dowd indicating that they're going to be buying, that China's going to be buying more. Wow.
That's certainly true. And this whole discussion about exports is, we know we're wildly not even meeting USDA's new lower numbers. We know that will change a little bit anyway, simply due to the corn U.S. versus Brazil mispricing now. Also, you know, let's also throw in a little bit of direct corn to China with a trade deal. I still come up just a little short in meeting USDA's current numbers here.
Okay. All right. Hey, are you geeking out over seeing the language of this Phase 1 treaty agreement as much as I am?
Trying to decipher, yes, yes.
It's going to be fascinating to see this. We've been told that the full language is going to be available online, and we're going to take a look at it. Is it the purchase agreement that's got you excited, or is it the enforcement?
I think the enforcement is what we all have to focus on. Yes.
Yes. I agree, man, because they can say all they want to about oh, yeah, we've agreed to do this, and we're going to buy that, and we're going to buy this, and this is going to be our bridge back to where we were on ag trade. But if there's no enforcement in there or inadequate enforcement, you can't hold them to it. Hey, when we come back, we're going to continue the conversation with Rich Nelson. What do we do? What do we do now that this corn market might be moving back to the upside?
The mighty Prosoro, king of fungicides. Its fast action and long residual make it the keeper of grain quality and yield, the hammer of head and leaf diseases, the number one reducer of scab. When your goal is greater wheat quality and higher yield, use Prosoro fungicide, and the crown of higher profit will be yours. Learn more at prosoro.us. Always read and follow label instructions.
Hey, Jim, how would you describe our D.C. Signal to Noise podcast?
It's a dairy parlor analysis of the D.C. politics that impact America's farmers and ranchers.
Dairy parlor analysis? What do you mean?
No bull.
Download the D.C. Signal to Noise podcast with Jim Wiesmeyer and me, John Harith, every Friday on agweb.com, the AgriTalk app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's time for AgriTalk's Tech Talk. Pro Farmer Senior Economist Dan Vaught joins us. Dan, what's the market move that matters the most today?
Hey, Chip, I'm looking at March soft red winter wheat futures today. The soft red winter wheat market has been rallying since early September, with the March contract climbing from around $4.60 per bushel to last Friday's high at $5.68.5. That trend seems destined to remain intact for a while, but I would warn that its 14-day relative strength index is sending a warning signal. That is, while March futures have posted three fresh six-month highs over the past month, the 14-day RSI has been edging lower. Such divergences often signal a looming technical reversal, but I would also point out that its MACD, another momentum indicator, has continued inching higher, so it's not clear that a reversal is coming. Still, I think the chart's telling bulls to pull in their horns a bit.
Wow. Okay. Thank you so much, Dan. That is Pro Farmer Senior Economist Dan Vaught. Pro Farmer members, get your daily advice updates at profarmer.com.
Find it now at shopfarmjournal.com. Brand new to the shop is the best of tractor tales, as seen each week on U.S. Farm Report. This two DVD set features dozens of classic machines and the collectors who bring them back to life. You'll get one DVD that's all green, the best of John Deere. The second DVD includes classics like Alice Chalmers and many more. Buy one DVD for $29.95 or buy the set for $49.95. Order today at shopfarmjournal.com or call toll free 877-847-9599. You can find it now at shopfarmjournal.com.
The education at Commodity Classic is simply unmatched in all of agriculture.
This is for learning. This is an opportunity to meet with people that you don't get to see on a daily basis. There's a lot of really big, important people who know a lot. And I think that's something that you don't get on a daily basis, and that's awesome.
See your future clearly at Commodity Classic in San Antonio, Texas, February 27th through 29th. Discover more at commodityclassic.com.
I'm Andrew McRae, your host for Farming the Countryside. We're talking about issues, tips, and trends affecting rural and agricultural America.
Then it was a burden on the local office. Essentially, you just have our county right now, or PLC.
On each show, I talk with guests who provide the latest info on important topics and the challenges and successes on their own operations.
We had an open house and invited the entire community. It was a huge event. We had about 750 people show up.
The Farming the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Nutrien Ag Solutions, the world's largest provider of crop inputs and services.
5 conferences, 1 location, something for your entire team. Get ready. The 2020 Top Producer Summit is set for January 27th through the 30th in Chicago. This year's summit is a combination of the 5 highly regarded top producer conferences: Top Producer Seminar, Executive Women in Agriculture, Tomorrow's Top Producer, Farm Journal Legacy Project, and, for the first time, the Farm Journal Hemp Summit. Register today for Top Producer Summit at tpsummit.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip. We've got Davis with me.
Uh-huh.
We're talking with Rich Nelson from Allendale today. Before we get back to the conversation, let's go ahead and recap how the markets closed today.
Sure thing. Well, March hard red futures were 2 cents lower at 4.92¾. March soft red futures slipped 2¼ to 5.62¼. March corn futures 3¾ cents higher, 3.89½. December 2020 corn closed at 4.04¾. That's up 2 cents today. March soybean futures 3¾ cents lower, 9.42¼. November beans closed at 9.69¾, down a nickel today. Feb cattle futures 87.5 cents lower, 126.55. March feeders off $1.60, 145.85. And February lean hogs were $1.35 lower, 65.90. Chip, there's your quick market recap.
All right. Thank you so much. Rich Nelson is the chief strategist at Allendale. We spent a lot of time in the last segment talking about corn. I want to try to put a finish on that, Rich. As I was saying what I said at the end of the last segment about can this corn market continue to the upside, what do you want to do with corn? I mean, you look at this 404, I guess, in the Dease contract. Is that where we're at? Yes, 404¾ in the Dease contract. Is that something that you're telling guys, hey, pay attention here, may need to take advantage of it?
In the grand scheme of things, yes, and we have started some very, very light discussions with this whole starting new crop discussion.
Okay.
We do think that the next 3 months will give us some higher pricing, but okay. Obviously we're still a bit concerned by the overhang of this potential with a 2020 fall crop, though.
Okay, so what drives the next 3 months? Is it China? Is it weather? Is it sorting out acres for 2020?
And that's definitely the big question. I do think that the China issue, if implemented, and yes, if they buy, that will be the story for us in the very short term. But like you mentioned, I think we still have some questions about this 2020 acreage mix. Are we too low in how many extra acres of corn and soybeans? Are we right or are we wrong with the assumption that corn acres will see this jump like beans? Right? So a lot of questions, I think, though.
Yeah. That acreage number for 2020, I've heard some all the way up to 97, 98 million. But I'm starting to hear a consensus around 94, Rich. Where are you at?
So right now we have plugged in, 93.7. Actually, okay. Just a plain 4.0 million acre increase. And that's just a starting point for where we're seeing this number at here.
Okay. There's some, because of all the prevent plant acres in 2019, Rich, people are looking at this year's harvested acres compared to last year's harvested acres on corn and saying, how in the heck did that happen? We actually harvested a couple of 100,000 acres more than what we did a year ago on corn, but on soybeans, we're off big time. And getting that all sorted out and trying to figure out where we end up in 2020, I mean, that's a job for farmers. It's not for you and me, is it?
Oh, sure. That's exactly right. And compounding this issue is a lot of that sudden strong resistance against soybeans last year happened with the failed May trade talks, which happened right in the face of when we should have been planting. So,
yes,
the delay is going on, but plus the extreme hatred or concern at that time with the failed trade talks, that actually throws another wrench in the whole thing here right now.
Right. Okay. So we go from... We go from 80, just call it 90 million acres planted this year up to that 94, something like that. Where do you see soybean acres going? Because we went from 89.2 million planted a year ago down to 76.1 million because of the disastrous planting season that we had this in 2019. How much of that do we recover?
You know, and for right now, I am plugging in something like, I want to say, like a 5 million acre increase just for the soybean side. And I still think there's a lot of potential movement in that number itself. Yes. And obviously, it depends on how this trade deal could or could not turn out.
Yep.
Another issue with this whole excitement we have with China trade numbers is this is an annual base $40 billion buy to make happen. And whether it's we get 40 million tons or 45 as JCI, the other question is how much of this will be distributed in the current old crop and how much will be pushed into new crop, which, of course, starts September
1. Yes. Attitude on beans. You know, we're at 475 on the carryover projection from the December S&D, from the January S&D. When I start hearing talk about 5 million, 6 million more acres of beans in 2020 than what we had in 2019, that 475 turns into 600 pretty easy, doesn't it?
It sure does. And, you know, the bull argument is, well, hey, you know, for every 1 million ton of new soybean exports, that's roughly 37 million bushels. So do we have an extra 400 million that we need to add on to exports? Is that a question or is that too much? So I think there's so many arguments for bulls and bears right now that it's going to be quite interesting these next few weeks here.
Yeah, no doubt about it. No doubt. Dan Vaught was talking about the rally that we've seen in the SRW market. Some of the momentum indicators are starting to indicate that maybe things are getting a little, the air is getting a little thin after a dollar rally. But when you look at the acres from the winter wheat seedings report, Rich, it blew me away. When I saw 30.8 million total planted, I thought, oh, okay. Yeah, it's a little heavy, but it's no big deal. And then you look at the breakdown between the SRW and the HRW, and it was all of a sudden an eventless report. It turned into an event for me. I thought it was really interesting.
Yes. And on top of this, let's also bring in the fact that the world situation on a world stocks to use or whatever world measurement you have, that still says we have some big, big numbers on the world wheat market. But all what we are focusing on here is the fact that the U.S. specifically has changed a little bit. We are declining versus previous years in stocks to use. And like you mentioned here, we now have some questions about whether U.S. wheat still needs to have a little further upside to price in this fact that the U.S. situation has changed.
Yeah. Yeah. So SRW acres up 439,000 from a year ago and 522,000 bigger than expected. In HRW country, down 658,000 from a year ago, 286,000 less than traders expected. And we've got the SRW market trading at, let's see, what are we going to call it now? We're going to call it a 70-cent premium.
Yeah.
To the HRW market. Does that go away?
And that's really interesting, especially the fact that traders think of Chicago wheat being the wheat market. If we traded these truly balanced and we had an equal number of volume, so to speak, and or more so in the KC contract, I do think that would be taken away. However, in my viewpoint, I think that the Chicago contract will hold a little artificial premium still in the face of this KC. So I do think it should be changed. However, I'm not sure how aggressively that spread would change.
Okay. All right. You know, reading between the lines of what Dan said at the bottom of the hour there in the tech talk, I think he's wanting to price some wheat in here. What are your thoughts there?
I've got no problem at all with that. And the simple fact is we've added a dollar on to, you know, like the Chicago contract here. So no problem with that discussion. And as it stands right now, I don't think anyone really has any big arguments about this winter wheat planting. So I do think these numbers are pretty firm. And I've got no problem at all with that viewpoint.
All right. Anything else on the grain or crop side, Rich, that caught your eye or that you're thinking about right now?
Just in general, I think what you kind of alluded to right before on that last break here. A simple fact is we have a lot of concerns, and as long as we still have this rhetoric about the fact that this trade deal could have some type of enforcement mechanism, that's good news, but I still think we need to have just a small amount of concern of the what if it does not happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's get, evidently there's like 200 representatives from agriculture being brought into D.C. for this signing. Should be interesting. Just a little bit of time left. What's your thoughts on cattle, Rich? I mean, we've been toying with the idea of pushing that front month contract, February, up into the 130s, but just haven't gotten there yet.
No. Last week's trade, 124, like you guys mentioned before, volume traded last week, a little lighter than we'd like to see. I still think we'll get to 129 or 130 for the year's cash cattle peak. So I still think the next 4 to 6 weeks are a moderately bull market ahead. Small concerns are the fact that packer margins have tailed down a bit here. I think maybe a little hiccup here or there as long as we have some clear skies for the plains. But bottom line, 4 to 6 weeks of higher trade, and then we have to have some serious concern about the high-priced summer contracts.
Yeah. I've not seen a market confined to a $2 trading range like we've seen this February cattle for quite some time. I mean, $4 range, I should say, between 124 and 128. It's really something in here. I mean, it still feels like you got to give it a chance. Like you just said, you got to give it a chance to close out over 128. And we'll see where we go from there. Rich, good luck to you in 2020, man. We'll be talking with you again soon, okay?
Sounds great. Thank you so much.
All right, that is Rich Nelson. Rich is the chief strategist for Allendale. Yeah, so what are the charts telling us? Where should we be going next? Boy, there's been quite a bit of movement on these markets. We're going to be taking a look at March corn, March soybeans, and we'll take another look at the live cattle market with Kerry Artak from the Artak Advisory up next on AgriTalk.
Five conferences, one location, something for your entire team. Get ready. The 2020 Top Producer Summit is set for January 27th through the 30th in Chicago. This year's summit is a combination of the five highly regarded top producer conferences, Top Producer Seminar, Executive Women in Agriculture, Tomorrow's Top Producer, Farm Journal Legacy Project, and for the first time, the Farm Journal Hemp Summit. Register today for Top Producer Summit at tpsummit.com.
It doesn't matter what you grow or how many acres you farm. Commodity Classic will help you become an even better farmer.
You don't have to be a big farmer to come here. You know, I could tell you a 1,000, 1,500 acre grower or a 500 acre grower is going to value these things, and he's going to do a lot better job when he leaves here. You know, it's going to make him more conscious of what's going on his farm than ever before.
Commodity Classic, February 27th through 29th in San Antonio. Visit commodityclassic.com.
Sweet strawberry icing. You're in Goodwill and just past that vintage denim jacket, you spot miniature donut earrings. You lean in. Ah, that's the scent of shopping success. Because at Goodwill, every item you buy funds local job training and more. So bring home those donut earrings and bring home so much good to your community. Goodwill. Bring good home. Brought to you by Goodwill and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Ag Day host Clinton Griffiths, and I invite you to join me each morning as we cover the nation's food system, from fields of green to orchards of orange and livestock everywhere in between. America runs on agriculture, and here at Ag Day, agriculture's what we do best. Listen as our analysts track the markets, learn about innovations in technology and sustainability, and live the country lifestyle through the eyes of rural America. Join me, Clinton Griffiths, for Ag Day, the country experience.
You probably can't tell from the sound of it, but Simtrex is a different kind of dry fertilizer with new potential waiting to be harvested. Every dark compact granule is engineered to efficiently deliver slow-release bio-based nutrition that improves soil health and increases yields for a 3 to 5 times return on investment. Unleash the power of your land. Ask for Simtrex in your next blend or visit futureoffertilizer.com.
Just like the weather, crop insurance keeps changing. And that's why Farm Credit Services of America employs full-time crop insurance officers who understand those changes, deliver the best options to your farm, and the coverage you expect. The weather can be surprising. Your crop insurance shouldn't be. Discover the difference with a no-cost, no-obligation crop insurance plan review from Farm Credit Services of America. Learn more by calling 800-884-FARM.
I'm Zach Johnson, a row crop farmer in Minnesota.
And I'm Mitchell Hora, a farmer in Iowa.
Agriculture has to feed a growing population, and many people want us to pull that off without messing up the environment. So how do we do that?
We're trying to figure that out on our podcast, Fieldwork. Check us out on the AgriTalk app and learn more at fieldworktalk.org.
Mr. Chairman, as a corn root, I speak for millions of my kind who can't be here to defend themselves. Pests are stalking our stocks and undermining our roots. But we can elect to protect with a legacy of strength. Punchovotivo 2.0 seed treatment system increases nearby microbial activity to help us grow stronger. That's smart. Ladies and gentlemen, please, this is a corn roots movement. Ask your BASF seed advisor about Punchovotivo 2.0 seed treatment. Always read and follow label directions.
5 conferences, 1 location, something for your entire team. Get ready, the 2020 Top Producer Summit is set for January 27th through the 30th in Chicago. This year's summit is a combination of the 5 highly regarded top producer conferences, Top Producer Seminar, Executive Women in Agriculture, Tomorrow's Top Producer, Farm Journal Legacy Project, and for the first time, the Farm Journal Hemp Summit. Register today for Top Producer Summit at tpsummit.com.
Picture yourself driving the tractor of your dreams, creeping up and down the rolling hills, enjoying an incredible sunset, and feeling satisfied that you were able to finally find your dream tractor at a reasonable price. Visit MachineryPete.com for the best selection of used tractors, skid steers, mowers, and more. We've revolutionized searching for equipment online. Find exactly what you're looking for quickly and easily. Your next piece of equipment is only a click away on MachineryPete.com. Visit MachineryPete.com now.
Do you suffer from talking on the radio phobia? No problem. Send us a tweet at hashtag AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Glad that you could join us today. Got Davis Michelson with me as well.
Yeah.
Bottom line from that conversation is there is nothing wrong with rewarding a $1 rally in any market,
right?
Including wheat.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, be taking a look at that, guys, and see if it's time, see if it works for you. So let's get to it, because I know we've got a lot to cover on the chart outlook from Kerry Artak, Artak Advisory. Kerry, thanks for joining us again. How are you?
I'm doing great, Chip. Thanks for having me again.
You bet. You bet. Don't forget, everybody, Kerry's got a 2-week free trial waiting for you at Artak, A-R-T-A-C, advisory.com. Just go there, and Kerry will take care of you. All right, let's kick it off with March corn.
Yeah, March corn. A lot of static levels in March corn, but bottom lining this in terms of big picture, 356 even still remains a long-term channel bottom, 15 years long on the monthly chart that we tested in early September. And having tested that, this market can, big picture, longer term, reach into the 436 even area, well above the market now, say by late spring, early summer. Now, as I've been mentioning on your show, I still have a pivot point just above the market at 390 even. I do have some near-term buy signals on the daily chart that played out today. But for those of your listeners who, you know, just are waiting for the end of the week, closing above 390 even is enough for me to assume that this market will continue up to that 436 even area, likely by March contract expiration. So over the next couple of months, along the way, I've got 417 and a quarter that can contain buying, say, through February. But like I said, if we close Friday, the week itself above 390 even, that 436 even ceiling I've been talking a lot about the last month or so would then be expected by March expiration, where we could actually place a seasonal high, which is to say through spring, possibly into summer. On to March soybeans. Similar situation here, although the beans have been much more bullish than corn, as you're well aware, over the last few weeks.
Right.
In early December, we tested long-term support at 861 even. Following that test, for those of my subscribers who are longer term in scope, I've been mentioning 990 as a late spring, early summer target. We're much closer to that in the beans than we are to corn in terms of its target. In fact, 921 half, well below the market now. The today's settlement at 942 and a quarter March soybeans 921.5 is our floor really through February trade. It is a pivot point and above which that 990 even longer term objective should actually be realized, say, by the end of February. 990 even is a significant long term resistance area that can contain buying into summer trade. It's also a significant upside acceleration point into summer. I'll be talking a lot about that as we approach 990 even over the coming weeks, presumably so. But, you know, if we sell off in the next week or two and close below 921.5, then all bets are off to the upside. We should then actually retest 861 even long-term support over the following 3 to 5 weeks where we can bottom out through spring and even into summer trade. Now, finally, February live cattle, bullish still above 124.65 this week, still expecting that 132.05 long-term resistance area. Now, I know many of your longer-term hedgers in live cattle are now looking out at the summer months. The problem is that, you know, the longer-term live cattle continuation charts that reflect years of activity and based on volume reflect the February contract. So, you know, you have to do these translations. I just wanted to throw some numbers out there. That 132.05, that long-term ceiling I'm still expecting, is currently equivalent to 125 even June contract and 125 even June contract and 122 half August contract. So if these spreads, as you're well aware, Chip, they fluctuate on a day-to-day basis, so you have to kind of follow them. I just wanted to throw it out there that I do follow the distant contracts, and you do have to make the translation between February and those distant contracts as they relate to the 132.05 long-term target in February. 132.05 expected over the next 2 to 3 weeks, I think, is realistic, where we can actually top out into summer trade. It's also a significant upside continuation point into summer. I'll talk about that in the coming weeks as we presumably test 132.05. Let's talk downside finally. If we closed below 124.65 February contract at the end of the week, then I'm no longer expecting 132.05 by February expiration. I think the market then is likely to fall back to 118.5 by February expiration. But bottom line, in February, live cattle bullish above 124.65 into February, still expecting 132.05 as a long-term target.
Gotcha. Gotcha, Kerry. Thank you so much, buddy. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, Chip. Take care.
You bet. You bet. That's Kerry Artek, Artek Advisory. At Hort Forsyth just tweeted at us, what do you think might cause such a move to 436 given the recent USDA report that, you know, didn't show us a whole lot of reason to move the market higher? But, you know, Chad and Davis, Brian Grady pointed out this morning in Markets Now that, you know, the carryover is still down from month to month, went from that 1.91 down to 1.892. And the idea here is that they may have bottomed out on the export number.
Okay.
There may be a reason, like we were just talking about with Rich Nelson from Allendale, that the conversion rate might not be quite as good on some of this corn, so you might need to see that corn for ethanol grind go up. So maybe we've bottomed out the demand stuff, Chad. I think that might be the reason or part of the incentive to get that move up to 436. But the specs can do it. The chart watchers can do it on their own, too. I mean, you can't forget that sometimes it doesn't take a fundamental factor. Sometimes all it takes is money management and money movement to get that done. National Weather Service 6-10-day outlook. It's got below normal temperatures and below normal precipitation in the outlook for January 19th through the 23rd. Tweet of the day.
Today's tweets are brought to you by The Glamorous Life. Ah, The Glamorous Life. So easy to find in tabloids, so difficult to actually achieve. Now today's tweets. At Wentworth Farms, nice day to be pulling out and cleaning up an old fence row. Nice to be doing this at 30 degrees instead of 85. At J. Lazy S. Angus, everything about ranching is ultra glamorous. I don't use a shovel, so I'm not a pooper scooper. And at Trouble with Tribble, 35-year-old British father of one decides to move out of grandmother's house. Ooh, so glamorous.
You need to be careful how you say lazy S. That's all I'm going to say. Hey, come back and join us again tomorrow. We've got former Secretary Tom Vilsack and Brian Hoops from Midwest Market Solutions.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
3, 2, 1. Oh no. Which button am I?
When every second counts, you can't wing it.
Guys, a little help up here?
In a home fire, you may have less than 2 minutes to get out. So make a family home fire escape plan. Then practice home fire drills at least twice a year so everyone knows what to do when they hear. Prepare your family at ready.gov/firedrill. Brought to you by FEMA, the Ag Council, and Make Safe Happen.
Thanks to Miravis Neo Fungicide for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your retailer today about pre-ordering Miravis Neo or visit the Miravis Neo webpage for more information. Always read and follow label instructions.